Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Hey, listeners. We want your input on season 20, which, I have to be honest, does not sound like a real number. What elements of the craft do you want us to talk about? What episode or core concept do you use or reference or recommend the most? Or what are you just having trouble with? After 20 seasons, we've talked about a lot of things. What element of writing do you wish we'd revisit for a deeper dive on the podcast? Email your ideas to podcast@writingexcuses.com. Season 19, Episode 15. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on voice, tying it all together.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard.
So this episode, we are reaching the end of our first little module here, talking about This Is How You Lose the Time War. And we want to focus a little bit on both recapping some of the stuff we've talked about, but also making sure it feels actionable for you, the audience, about how you can start to apply this to your own fiction. So one of the things I really wanted to focus on, I think we've hit a number of times over the past few episodes, is we can sometimes think about voice as a very passive element of your story. You decide the voice at the beginning, and then once you sort of finish your opening section, you're like, that's the voice for my book. I hope you can see from the past few episodes, as we looked at red and blue and the letters individually, how voice is an active participant in developing the plot, in developing the characters, and really carrying the reader through in a way with much more clarity than if the voice hadn't evolved.
And this is something that is a factor that you will find in most fiction that you're going to be reading or writing, that if you have a character arc, I should say, if you have a character arc, your character at the end is not the same person they were at the beginning. So it is natural that the voice of the character would evolve over the course of the story, but we often don't think about it. We just let it go for a ride. So thinking about some of the tools that we've used here, the big one that I would say for adjusting things is the experiential nature of the character, like that they are seeing things differently at the end than they are at the beginning. So you're going to be using different language to highlight things as one example.
I think another thing is building on that different language is also that characters learn things. You know what I mean? And there are things we always carry with us. Like if you were the child of fisher folk, maybe you always use fish metaphors throughout the rest of your life. But if you suddenly learn magic or you learn how to become an engineer or you go to space, the type of language that you use will mm-hmm. change. And I think a lot of times, again, we will sometimes think, oh, I've set up the knowledge that my character has at the beginning of the story. And then that knowledge changes, but has the language changed yeah. with it? And so you can sort of look at a paragraph from the beginning of something you've written and something at the end and say, do these seem the same? And if they do, is that a choice that I've made, or is that something that I've defaulted into?
Well, one great example of that is in the letters, they start referencing this thing that's like Mrs. Leavitt's Guide, which is some kind of manual of etiquette manual. Thank you. That teaches them how to write letters. And, you know, Red is using this actively, and we see Red discover postscripts and all kinds of different aspects of letter writing. But that's also a cue for the audience as well of showing how literally Red and Blue are teaching each other how to speak to each other, right? And we'll see poetry start to appear in Red's letters. We see this back and forth about different elements of letter writing, the postscripts and things like that. And, you know, I think it's really reflecting what Aaron's talking about of how you can actively and deliberately have your characters learn how to speak and how to write in a way that shows their ongoing entanglement and that way that language changes.
The tool that I would first recommend that you, fair listener, take from this this whole close read. Allow yourself to love to write.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let yourself love it. Lose yourself in it. In our previous episode, I used the word luxuriate. Aaron used the word indulgence. Embrace those, please. Luxuriate in it. Indulge yourself in writing, and that joy will begin to lock in some of these tools for you. Because I'm watching Mary Robinette work from notes as she talks to us and lists these things that we can do deliberately. And I think I will never be able to do all of that deliberately. And that's fine. I am just going to have fun with it and then remember those rules and rewrite deliberately.
Well, so frequently the tools that I list are things that I use to punch up my fiction, that it's sometimes it's stuff that I do unconsciously because I come out of theater. And so, you know, getting into a character voice and rhythm is something that I was trained to do and have internalized. But other times when I'm writing with depression, I cannot write through the joy. I reach for the craft and I'll let myself get something down that's messy, knowing that I can come back and I will look at it and say, okay, pacing wise, where does this character pause? Is this a character that speaks in long, fluid sentences, or is this a character that speaks in short, punctuated sentences? And I will go through and I'll adjust my punctuation. I will think about the word choice. I frequently go back in, even with something that I have written from a place of joy, will go back in and look at how I can dial up a character's particular accent, like what are the word choice and sentence structure that makes this character more specifically them? How do I remove the ambiguity so none of the other characters on the page could have said that sentence?
And I think we do a lot of this subconsciously all the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, think about being in a meeting or even listening to this podcast. You'll be like, oh yeah, that's such a so-and-so thing to say. Or like when somebody starts the meeting, you're like, they're going to use a long metaphor and talk about their cat because that's what they always do.
Have I told you about Elsie recently?
Who's Elsie?
Elsie is my cat who uses buttons to talk. And it's very much, carry on.
That was absolutely, the cat thing was no shade. I've been looking at pictures of my own cat all day. But I think that, think about the things that you do. How do you recognize somebody else's voice? Mm-hmm. And then what is it about it? Is it the length? Is it the things that they reference? Is it a specific word that they always use that is a thing that they always come back to? And then think about how can you create characters that have that same depth and richness.
And also think about who your character is addressing, because that is one of the things, again, that we do naturally that Aaron was just talking about. So when your character is speaking to someone else, do they have the same rhythm every mm-hmm. time, or do they change it based on who they're talking to?
Yeah, and I think one thing that comes through so clearly in this is kind of going also to what Aaron's saying, that, you know, allow yourself to be yourself as you write, right? This is the third part of voice that we didn't talk about, which I'm forgetting the exact term we use for it, but...
Personal voice.
The personal voice, right? And, you know, red and blue sound very distinct because they're written by different people. And I get the distinct pleasure of being friends with these people, so I know how they talk. And these are such heightened versions of how Max speaks and how Amal speaks, but their natural rhythms and their natural proclivities in how they talk, how they construct a metaphor are coming through, and they let that happen, right? There was no hiding who they were. They were, in fact, amping that up, I think, to make that distinction very clearly felt in the different sections. So I think one other lesson you can take here, in addition to let yourself have fun, you know, write from a place of joy when you can, is also, just because we're giving you all these tools to manipulate voice, to use it in these different ways that are very deliberate, don't feel like what we're also saying is you have to hide who you are. The way you talk, the way you think, the way you speak, sometimes the most distinctive fiction is the one that feels like you are talking to the person who wrote it.
The way I often describe this is you've spent your entire life honing your taste as a reader, and you've got good taste. So trust your taste when you're writing.
Exactly.
I would say as both a reader and a listener, because mm-hmm. I think there are ways of writing, ways of that speaking that actually don't make it into fiction mm-hmm. as often. Mm-hmm. So if you love the way that your auntie tells a story, you know, maybe there's a way to take that and put that on a page in a way that nobody else could, because nobody else has your auntie. Well, except your relatives. So just get that and put that on the page. And because it comes from you and your experience, it will feel real and it will feel valuable to the reader.
Depending on the relatives, it might be a sister or a daughter.
Yeah.
So you were still right. None of them have your version of her.
Yeah, and that's the personal voice. So the thing about this is that what we're trying to do here is to teach you the mechanical and the aesthetic voice and how to manipulate them. And what we hope is that you can learn to inhabit your own personal voice, because mechanical and aesthetic can be learned. Personal is all about just learning to trust yourself.
I have a smiley face for you after our break.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge, and I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/WX.
This week, I want to talk to you about Princess Weeks. She has some of my favorite YouTube video essays on the internet right now, and she has this way of bringing excellent story, culture, and media analysis that has helped me immensely in crafting my own work. She looks at popular or unpopular works of media, asks the right kind of questions that get you thinking, and explains why it did or didn't have the impact it was looking for. Specifically, her video on why The Last Duel failed was an excellent critique of how you can look at a movement like Me Too or see the problems in representation of women and then try, but fail, at addressing the true reason the movement happened. But you should really go watch all of her things. That's Princess Weeks on YouTube.
One of my biggest fears when I pick up long lists of tools and techniques is that it will suck the joy out of whatever it is that I've written, that it will become mechanical, it will become cookie cutter or recipe or whatever. And my solution for this is the smiley face in red pen when I am reviewing my manuscript or when I am critiquing someone else's. If there is something that sings to me, makes me laugh, it was a wonderful metaphor, whatever, I put a smiley face next to it. That means there may be other things you need to change in this document, but don't break this bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't break this bit. And I gotta tell you, the smiley face has been the most valuable critique mark that I write to myself, because it stands as a reminder. Because when Absolutely. I go back over the text, I don't always remember how much I loved that the first time I wrote it or the first time I reread it.
It's such a huge mistake I see early career editors make, right? When they're starting out and doing their first books that they're working on, they'll give feedback and the author will be like, I thought I wrote a good book. What happened? And I'm like, you did write a good book. This person just forgot to write down all the parts where they liked this, right? Mm-hmm. And they forgot to do what I call, think of as an alignment exercise of like, first you tell the writer, here's what I loved about this book. Here's why it's important. Here's why, you know, all these things are working. Now let's get on to some of the stuff that isn't working that will further highlight what does work, right? And so I think when it comes to voice, when you go through your manuscript, I think this is great advice from Howard of learn to recognize what things do sound like you and you like that fact, right? And lean into that going forward.
Yeah, it's a more of this, please.
Yeah.
And this is something that I love calling it an alignment exercise. This is, again, trusting your own taste, trusting that personal voice. The books that you love, you're not the only person who loves that book. And when you read it, you have an emotional response to it every time you read it. So when you're reading your own book and you have emotional responses, trust those emotional responses. Those are genuine things that you experience as a reader. And if you like it, lean into it. It's like, oh, okay, I did that well. And when you're learning, you can use these tools to say, okay, what did I do well here? How can I do that intentionally and heighten it later in other parts of the book so that this thing that I love, I continue to be good at?
I also think with voice specifically, because it can be hard to really capture the voice mm-hmm. of a character, or at least it is for me, is sometimes I'll go through and find a sentence or a paragraph where I feel like this is this person. Like I really got it here. And sometimes I'll have to write my way into it. Like I'll start writing the story. It's not quite there. And then I'm like, this is the phrasing that this character would absolutely use 100% of the time. And I will highlight that. And then when I go to either revise or write more, I will start by grounding myself in that sentence or paragraph and say, okay, this is what I'm trying to get to. This is the feeling. Now, can I carry it forward?
Yeah.
As someone who has built PCs, I love the word grounding myself, because if I forget to ground myself, I'll destroy a $1,500 video card absentmindedly.
Well, and this, in audiobook narration, we call this thing that you're talking about, we have a word for it, it's called a key phrase, and it's used to get yourself into the rhythms of the character so that you remember, what is my pacing for this? What is the accent of this character? What attitude do I have? And I think that that's the thing that you're looking for when you're looking for this phrase. It's like it embodies all of those things in a single moment.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of building off of this, the one thing that I also want people to remember when experimenting with voice, in addition to the other elements we're talking about, is don't be afraid to take a big swing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't be afraid to push yourself and reach for the tonality, the voice, the emotion that you're looking for, whether that is the blunt, muscular brutalism of red or the deep, poetic organicness of blue. These are huge swings in terms of voice, right? They're really aiming for the fences with how far they're pushing this. And I think that's part of the joy of the book, and that's part of the playfulness of the book, is this sort of high-wire formalist act that they're pulling off here. And then we see that, again, in the letters, the way they become so profoundly, hugely romantic. That is not a thing you see very often in text. And I think one of the reasons people responded to it so well is both the humor, but also the, oh my God, these characters are so in love with each other. And feeling that in your body as you read it is really wonderful.
Sports ball has the best metaphor here. You miss 100% of the pitches you don't swing at.
Yeah.
You know, you take that big swing. And speaking as someone who is at this moment remembering very vividly some of my young writer mistakes and fears, you will miss some of those pitches you swing at. And the good news is that as a writer, you get to go back and rewrite. You get to put the novel in a trunk or the story in a trunk and come back to it 10 years later and say, oh, now I have the skill set to finish this thing that I wanted to do. Or you come back, you know, 10 years later as, you know, Dr. Frankenstein, and this is more like my approach, and say, oh, that corpse is only good for parts. Mm-hmm. But I know which parts.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to stress everyone out, but from a publishing perspective, we're in an era where base hits aren't good enough, right? You got to be swinging for the fences. You know, it can be okay if you get on base, but that shouldn't be your target. Your target should be the home run. And so I encourage you to do all these things that we're talking about in terms of finding a way to get to that joyful place that you're writing from, but also to make sure you're pushing yourself and reaching for the thing that is really distinctive, is really going to stand out, is really personal.
I want to, as we're talking about this, I want to flag a thing that I see happen with early career writers with voice that is an accidental mistake. And I see it happen a lot, which is this idea we've been talking about pacing and finding the rhythm of the voice, is that you will have a character or the language of the text itself where everything has the same rhythm, where all the sentences are the same length, and you have this accidental repetition that again can flatten something, where all your paragraphs are the same length. And in the real world, you have this variety of rhythm, and something that you can really see when you look at This Is How We Lose the Time War is how intentionally they're using when the character speaks in a long sentence versus a short sentence, when the switch happens, when the variety takes place. So look at your own work and think about if you've been thinking my prose feels flat and your urge is to add like more adjectives, take a look at it instead and see if it's something that you can fix with your punctuation. Fixed by just breaking up how the sentences are structured.
I am almost shocked and amazed, Mary Robinette, that you didn't tell us to try reading it out loud. Because often that is how I identify it, when I realize just in the pattern of my breathing, in the pattern of my nodding, of my body movements, I'm like, oh, this is all written to the beat of the song I was listening to when I wrote it.
This is what I was going
to
say. I encourage people to think about the musicality of the text, right? Think about the rhythm, the sound, you know, all of those things. And one way to switch it up is to change the music you're listening to. If you write to music, whether it's wordless or with lyrics, find something with a different BPM, find something with a different tonality that can help you shift out of one rhythm. Or even if you're not using that specifically, just think about it as a piece of music of when do you want to change your time signature? When are you heading into the bridge? When are you heading into the verse, right? Those are all things that will help you unlock those tools of rhythm, of, you know, sound and poetics, and of repetition, which is also a very common thing in music, of when are you coming back to the same beat, the same note?
I also think it's just fun to sometimes deconstruct what you're doing. There's this song that I love called Title of the Song, in which each verse is like declaration of my feelings for you, elaboration on those feelings. The actual verses are telling you what the song would be doing. And sometimes when something feels off to me, I'll actually say like a long ass sentence that appears to be explaining the world, a really short quip. Like I'll actually look at what my thing is, what my sentences are attempting to accomplish. And if it's the same thing 8 times in a row, then it doesn't quite work.
Yeah.
Because to think about musicality and karaoke, one of my favorite things, even the most amazing singer, if they just come out and belt with no variety, they never make their voice softer, no matter how good the tone is, people will start to tune out about 2 like sentences in. Mm-hmm. Because they'll be like, oh, okay, that's what's happening here. Back to my conversation. The way you keep people in a song is the way that you keep people in writing, by using variety so they're not quite sure what's coming next and they feel like you're taking them on a journey that they want to go on with you.
The song between the servants. This is as good as it gets. In season 2 of Gallivant, the actress is trained as a Broadway singer, and they don't let her off the leash until the last 2 verses of that song, and she belts. And I get chills every time I hear it, because I realize that was the message of this song. She is breaking free from a life of servitude and accepting that she is good enough to not have to eat olives off the floor. And they communicate that with that note of just a couple notes. Oh, I get chills just thinking about it. And so, yeah.
Yeah, changing the rhythms. It's something that we're hardwired. We're hardwired to pay attention to repetition and then to also tune it out. The reasons are that if there's something that's a sameness, that's in, you know, if you think of us as humans, as animals, that's not important information. You know what it is, you've identified it. And so you're listening for the threat or the opportunity, the threat of the rhythm of someone, you know, of someone stalking you, or the drip drip of water that is a food source, a water source. And so again, like when you're placing those repetitions in your text, you want to be placing them in place in points where it's carrying information that the reader needs, as opposed to just accidental repetition that the reader tunes out as unimportant. It's like, oh yeah, it's all green. It's it's leaves.
Yeah. Yeah. If you want an example of how pacing and repetition can really enhance your experience, I love Tina Turner's rendition of Proud Mary, which starts very slow and then gets incredibly fast and intense by the end of it. And I think that sense of that increasing excitement and thrill and danger, all those things are communicated in that song as it changes very differently tonally from the beginning to the end. So, you know, I want all of you to sort of think about the musicality and think about that tonality and think about rhythm and repetition, as I'm demonstrating right now, as you're like really digging into how to keep building on the voice of your work.
And I think that brings us to our homework.
Our homework for this week is I want you to write a short outline of your work in progress. And this would be a new outline. And I want you to, instead of focusing on what are the plot beats for your characters, or yeah, you could even do this for a single character arc if you didn't want to do it for the whole book. But instead of writing down what happens to the character, make notes about how the voice of that character will change with those events. Make a little bit of an outline so you have a sense of the arc as the character changes how they see the world, how they're going to talk about the world and experience it.
I love that homework. This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Please rate and review us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. Your ratings help other writers discover us for the first time.
Support for today's show comes from The Inner Loop Radio. If you listen to us because you're a writer, then you'll also want to listen to Rachel and Courtney talk about how to stay inspired, how to stay focused, and how to stay sane. Subscribe now to The Inner Loop Radio on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, or any other podcasting site. Get inspired, get focused, and get lit on The Inner Loop Radio. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.